Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 193. As you may have noticed, episodes which are listed in the RSS feed and on iTunes and even on the app are starting to update with titles to each episode in addition to the number. Many of you have asked many times, can you label the shows? Can you give each one a title? And for a long time, it was very difficult to do. However, in the interest of getting this done, I have started to tackle 12 to 15 of those episodes every day over the last week. So I am trying to get them all done. I hope it makes it easier to find an episode that you are looking for. And again, I do need to say thanks to Simon Dick, a prospective candidate in New York, who is the man who put together our list of famous Freemasons, which is on our site now. So if you're looking for a specific episode or some information about a specific brother we covered, you can just check it there. It's a pretty good resource. I mentioned the app earlier. The app is now free, thanks to everybody who has supported the app over the last 2-3 years and paid that $2. Now we can offer it for free for everybody. You are the reason it's free and the Masonic light is spreading. So again, thank you so much for doing that. So you may have heard in the news about the Masonic Police Department, which was absolutely ridiculous. But after the next few announcements, I will have a treat for you, which ties into this as well. It's just crazy. So Masonic Radio Theater news. We are wrapping up the last couple parts here. I know I've been saying it for the last 3 or 4 weeks, but I've been busy with that. And I've also been remastering Manly P. Hall's lectures. And they are going to be clear as day. The background noise is being eliminated, and hopefully we will get those up and hosted somewhere for you guys to be able to download. Many thanks to Brother Gerald Brown for sending me a ton of the lectures, and as he mentioned, sometimes they can be difficult to listen to because of the hissing and whatnot, so I'm remastering them. They'll be digitally remastered, as you might want to call them. You'll enjoy them, I'm sure. The Valley of Chicago Dyslexia Center walk is literally next Saturday, so there won't be another episode of this show before it happens. I hope you guys can make it out there. I hope you can donate. I hope you can walk. It should be a really fun day. And if you're not going to be there, if you're going to be down in Bloomingdale, come on down to Bloomingdale. Hopefully get in touch with Worshipful Master Jesse Slater. He is the man handling all the tickets and whatnot for the education banquet. It may be already too late by the time you hear this to reserve anything for that, but perhaps try your chances if you can get a hold of him. For any additional information going back to the walk, just visit walkfordyslexiachicago.org. And if you want to help out the Dyslexia Center even more, do some shopping on freemasonryart.com and go ahead and use the promo code CCDC. And that'll give you 10% off, and 10% also goes back to the center. It's a really good deal. Many thanks to everybody on those pin pre-orders. I was hopefully going to have them in hand by the 7th. If you were following our Facebook feed, again, they are running a little bit of a delay, about a 5-day delay. I was really bummed out, but hopefully I'll get them. I already have all the envelopes addressed, so literally the day I get them, they should be all going out the next day or the day after that. So let's hope. And if you just can't wait for those, we do have the $5 button pins, and I send those out every single Monday. I do also, as usual, want to mention that I do have Tales from the Craft by illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison on paper. I have print copies in the WCY store. They're $18. They ship anywhere in the United States and $25 international shipping anywhere else on the planet. So check that out. This is our week that we have illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison on the show for his awesome Masonic Minute segment. And so we will have that later up in the show. And going back to the Masonic Police Department that I alluded to, Brother Bob Wakely sent me this story and I had to read it. It's from the front page of Yahoo Finance. Aide to California state attorney accused of running an occult police force claiming to be 3,000 years old. One of California Attorney General Kamala Harris' Democrat staffers was arrested last week and, quote-unquote, accused of operating a rogue police force that claimed to exist for more than 3,000 years. Brandon Keel, Deputy Director of Community Affairs at the California Department of Justice, and two others, David Henry and Tanette Hayes, reportedly faced charges for their roles in the Masonic Fraternal Police Department. Quote, suspicions about the Masonic Fraternal Police Department, whose members traced their origins to the Knights Templar, were aroused when various police chiefs in Southern California received a letter in late January that announced new leadership for the group. End quote. Following an investigation, officials said sheriff's investigators searched two sites in Santa Clarita and found badges, weapons, uniforms, and law enforcement paraphernalia. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department said in a statement that the Masonic Fraternal Police Department was not a legitimate police department and that Keel, Henry, and Hayes were arrested for allegedly impersonating police officers. Quote, detectives conducted a thorough investigation in collaboration with several law enforcement agencies and determined the MFPD, Masonic Fraternal Police Department, was not a legitimate police agency. You think? The sheriff's department said in a statement according to NBC News. The Times called attention to a website purporting to represent the Masonic Department. The site claims the police department is widely respected and operates in 33 states. What a coincidence. The Masonic Fraternal Organization is the oldest and most respected organization in the world. Grandmasters around the various states are facing serious safety concerns for their jurisdictions and their family members. The first police department was created by the Knights Templar back in 1100 BC. End quote. This is all from the site. When asked what the difference between Masonic Fraternal Police Department and other police departments were, the answer is simple. We were here first. So hilarious, guys. I don't even know where to start with this. It is just a riot. I hope you enjoyed that. Kind of a throwback to our Masonic conspiracy days. But let's get into this week's paper, which is an excerpt from a very interesting book called Earth's Forbidden Secrets by Maxwell Egan. Amazon had it up for sale for a little while, but they may or may not have gotten in some trouble over it because Maxwell Egan put the book out for the public for free. In any case, this is part of Chapter 2, and as we said last week, we would try and cover more information about the pillars or columns as they relate to the mysterious mythos in the past. Of course, the pillars, the forefront of Solomon's Temple is what I'm talking about. So here is some super interesting stuff to consider when we think about the pillars at the front of Solomon's Temple. Again, this is an excerpt of Chapter 2 from Earth's Forbidden Secrets by Maxwell Egan. A sunken world. Our primary source of information and first real glimpse of Atlantis comes from Plato in two ancient works, Timaeus and Critias. These two dialogues offer us a rich glimpse into the workings, government, and infrastructure of Atlantis from the perspective of Plato. There are many people who believe that these are the only two sources of the tale, but such a belief could not be further from the actual truth. There are numerous mentions of the island continent by other Grecian scholars who were not adding to or embellishing Plato's original account, but were in fact corroborating it, and there are other things that lend credence to Plato's accounts as well. One significant contributing clue is Plato's mention of the Pillars of Hercules, or Heracles, also known as Hercules, which were apparently two pillars of gold inscribed with ancient teachings in the form of hieroglyphics. Consider also the other ancient references from a number of sources. Number 1. Such pillars are mentioned in works by a commenter of Plato's writings called Proclus. Proclus mentioned that the traveler Crantor visited Sais in Egypt, as Solon had also done 300 years before him, and that during these visits both men had been shown a golden pillar inscribed with hieroglyphics, just as had been described by Plato. 2. Another Greek historian named Herodotus is reported to have actually seen two pillars, one of pure gold, the other of emerald, which shone in with such brilliancy at night, while visiting a temple of Heracles at Tyre, also known as Phoenicia. It was actually not uncommon for the Phoenicians to erect such quote-unquote pillars of Hercules, or Heracles, in almost all the places they colonized, as they did at Gibraltar, for example. The Phoenicians record that such pillars were erected to commemorate the first founding of Atlantis by Atlas and Heracles. Number 3. The Egyptian historian Manetho also mentions the existence of two pillars and tells us that before the Great Flood, the Egyptian deity Thoth inscribed them with hieroglyphics containing all the ancient wisdom so it would not be lost in the deluge that was soon to come. Number 4. Other historians have also reported that Alexander the Great inspected many such large pillars of gold bearing unusual hieroglyphic markings in the lands of northern India. These histories mention that Alexander traveled beyond the pillars of Hercules and Dionysus. This is quite a significant statement because Dionysus is in fact a divine representation of Atlas. his heavenly counterpart, so to speak. So here we have a European conqueror reportedly finding Atlantean pillars and a reference to Heracles and Atlas in northern India. Some people have also said that such pillars were constructed to mark the outer borders of the Atlantean territories. Interesting. Number 5. A Jewish historian called Josephus, who lived around the time of Christ, also made mention of either Seth or Thoth inscribing some pillars with ancient knowledge, quote, in order that wisdom and astronomical knowledge should not perish in the cataclysm, made two pillars, one of stone and one of brick, in which he inscribed the knowledge for posterity, said pillars still existing in the land of Syriad to this day. End quote. Number 6. The Mayans also have creation legends which talk of a lost and mysterious continent that they call Aztlan. They say that this land was the place from whence they first came, but it was destroyed in a terrible volcanic upheaval, and later sank beneath the seas, and their ancestors were forced to set out in canoes and catamarans to look for new lands. There was even a quite famous frieze that was removed from the Mayan city of Tikal, actually depicting the event. The stone frieze was displayed in the Berlin Museum, but was unfortunately destroyed during the Allied bombing of Berlin in 1945. Number 7. The Indian traditional texts of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata make constant references to the land of Atala, a quote-unquote paradise that sank beneath the sea. In these texts, the Rama Empire is recorded to have fought great wars against the people of Atala, with both nations using powerful and devastating weapons. Number 8. Many ancient maps, such as those mentioned in the second chapter, show a group of islands in the Atlantic Ocean, mostly just labeled as the Atlantic Islands. There are usually 7 of them shown on most ancient maps. Today, there are only 2 main islands in the area, Cuba and the Dominican Republic. However, many ancient maps show 3 or 4 more, as on King Henry's map of 1500 and the Benicasa map of 1482. Some see this as a reference to a sunken civilization. However, it must be taken into account that some islands have been known to come and go. These are just some other references to Atlantis that come from places that were not necessarily associated with Plato. And there are many tales of ancient cataclysms if one wants to delve a little deeper. One remarkable thing about all the tales of Atlantis, and the same is true for most references found in ancient texts that indicate they may be referring to a sunken civilization, is that all the events' timelines match up very closely. This becomes especially noticeable when it happens with events recorded by civilizations who apparently had no contact with each other. We will investigate this a little later, but for the moment, we will briefly revisit the actual legend itself. So there you have it. That is just a small portion of that book. It touched on those pillars a little bit, which I thought was pretty fascinating. Perhaps the idea that those pillars actually marked some kind of outer boundary of the continent of Atlantis, if it indeed existed. I think what we're going to do is give you easy access to the book by using it as the PDF in the app this week. So if you have a second, go find the Podcast Source app, which is free, and you'll have access to the show. You can download that book. It is given for free on the internet by Maxwell. So we're just going to help perpetuate and get that out there for everybody if you'd like to read it. It is a interesting book. So now we ask you to support the show. As we said before, we've supported the show enough that the apps are now free. You get the papers, wallpapers, and everything else that comes with it. So check those out. If you can, please check out onnit.com for some healthy living supplements or anything else you might be into as far as health and fitness go. If you use the promo code WCY at checkout, you'll get 10% off, and they will support this show with a donation. And if you check out freemasonryart.com, which is run by our friend and brother Juan Sepulveda, who has amazing artwork, all original stuff, it's just fantastic. And you can check that out, maybe get some early ideas. Mother's Day's around the corner, but we're talking about Father's Day here, so maybe go find yourself that great Father's Day gift for the Mason in your family. I know they will enjoy it. You can use the promo code, again, WCY, at his website as well, and that will give you 10% off. And Brother Juan will send a little bit back to the show here. And last but not least, FreemasonTees.com. Some of the most original t-shirt designs of a Masonic nature. You can check those out. They also use the coupon code WCY for 10% off. So check those out. You can check out the button pins for $5, direct PayPal donations in any amount you choose, either $1 or $2. It all goes back into funding this show. Last but not least is our pin pre-sale. So for $10 and $2 to ship, so $12 total, you can get yourself a official WCY lapel pin. 100% bronze. It's got some 24 karat gold plating on there as well. It's just a very little amount of gold. However, it still looks really nice. The poured enamel is fantastic, and we use a high quality E-clasp on the back instead of the typical button clasp. So if you're like me, you put your seatbelt on or you take your seatbelt off and the pin goes flying into the car and now you can't find it, well, this is not going to happen with these pins. So you're going to want to check those out. Visit WCYpodcast.com and click on Limited Edition Store to check that stuff out. We're going to go right into illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison's Masonic Minute.
Born near Richmond, Kentucky on Christmas Eve, 1809, Brother Christopher Houston, better known as Kit Carson, grew up to become an American frontiersman, trapper, and Indian fighter of the Old West. Carson's short life was filled with adventures that grew into legends. Here are just a few. He was once framed and arrested for murder, but his reputation was so impeccable, the town sheriff helped him to stage an escape so Carson could track down and apprehend the real killer. After mounting a campaign against gambling in his town, Tom Phillips, a friend of Carson, incurred the wrath of pro-gambling gang members. The gang attempted to lynch Phillips, but at the last second, as the noose tightened, Carson saved his friend's life by shooting the rope that was to hang him. He used himself as bait to lure a murderer out of the lawless Texas Badlands and back into the hands of the law. And finally, at 6'2" tall, he was a bare-knuckle, two-fisted fighter who seldom, if ever, lost, even when his opponents were bigger or when he was outnumbered. These are escapades of which legends are made, and while each has been attributed to Carson, not a single one is true. Despite the fact that Carson's life is clouded in legend, some of his real adventures make the legends look tame. Among those adventures, this one is real, was the strangest thing that ever happened to him and which haunted him for the remainder of his life. By 1849, the name Kit Carson was known everywhere in the country. One afternoon that year, the 39-year-old Carson, a member of Montezuma Lodge No. 1 in Santa Fe, was riding with a band of soldiers. They came upon an abandoned Apache camp. Here, Carson found the body of Ann White, who had been killed just minutes before his arrival. Among Mrs. White's effects, soldiers found a copy of the just-published dime novel, Kit Carson by Charles Averill. The book detailed the larger-than-life adventures of Carson, woodsman, hunter, guide, mountain man, and Indian fighter. Carson could picture Mrs. White reading the book in captivity, knowing her Superman was nearby and expecting rescue at any moment. He felt he had failed her and cursed Kit Carson the legend. The image of Mrs. White's body and his inability to help plagued Kit Carson for life. He spoke of the event in his memoirs as follows. We finally came in view of the Indian camp. The commanding officer ordered the men to charge, but the order was too late for the desired effect. In about 200 yards of pursuing the Indians, the body of Mrs. White was found, perfectly warm, had not been killed more than 5 minutes. Shot through the heart with an arrow, she evidently knew that someone was coming to rescue her. It was apparent that she was endeavoring to make her escape when she received the fatal shot. In camp was found a book, the first of which I had ever seen, in which I was made a great hero, slaying Indians by the hundreds. And I have often thought that as Mrs. White would read the same, knowing that I lived near, She would pray for my appearance and would be saved. I did come, but had not the power. Later, when the soldiers suggested giving Mrs. White's book to Carson, he replied, "If you do, I'll burn the damn thing." For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Again, just a fantastic segment. A huge thanks goes out to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison for his amazing commitment to be able to send those to us every couple weeks. We just can't say it enough. Thank you very much, brother. You can pick up his book again. It's called Freemasonry, Tales from the Craft, and it has a ton of amazing stories in there all about the fraternity, its involvement in certain aspects of history, and many other wild tales. Very cool stuff. It's a really great book. You can check it out. We have it on WCYpodcast.com in the store, and it's $18. It ships anywhere in the United States, and for $25, it ships anywhere on the planet. Keep in mind, we do wrap these things very nicely. They're sealed with a wax stamp. It's a very cool unboxing experience as well. So check those out. This week's famous Freemason is George Edward Ackerson, who was an American journalist and the first official White House press secretary. And he received his 32nd degree in Minneapolis, February 27th, 1929. Ackerson was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He attended the University of Minnesota at Allegheny College, taking classes in science, literature, and in art. And in 1910, Ackerson started at Harvard University, later receiving a bachelor's in political science in 1912. Ackerson married Harriet Blake, a Wellesley College graduate, on June 28, 1915, and they had three sons. In his college years, he worked summers at the Minneapolis Tribune, and after graduating Harvard, Ackerson worked there full-time as a reporter with the 1912 Democratic National Convention as one of his first assignments. The Tribune made Ackerson its Washington correspondent in 1921. And while in Washington in the 20s, Ackerson advised the Republican Party on how to compete with the rising nonpartisan league and progressive movements in the upper Midwest. That work brought Ackerson to the attention of Herbert Hoover, who was then the Secretary of Commerce. Hoover had Ackerson named as the Secretary of the Commission that ran the 1926 Sesquicentennial Exposition in Philadelphia, then hired Ackerson as his private secretary. Ackerson served as the White House press secretary in the Hoover administration from 1929 to 1931, the first official holder of that title. During Ackerson's tenure of office, the White House experienced increasing difficulties in its relations with the press corps. On January 2, 1931, Ackerson resigned to take an executive position at the Paramount Public Theaters Corporation, and Hoover replaced him with Theodore Goldsmith Joslin. Ackerson worked at Paramount for 2 years, then became the executive secretary of the National Code Authority of the paper distributing trade. Still aged in his 40s, Ackerson developed kidney disease and died in 1937. That's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You, check us out on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. You can email me anytime at that address or at admin@wcypodcast.com. Don't forget that the Masonic Roundtable goes live every Tuesday night at 10, 9 Central. The Midnight Freemasons have articles going up every week, three times in fact, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So check those out. Check out all the blogs and all the neat links we've got on wcypodcast.com. And keep your eyes and ears open for announcements regarding the new episode of Masonic Radio Theater. That's it, guys. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.